Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson, the former NFL player who's probably, you know, more famous, really, for his part in the most notorious criminal trials of the 20th century. He died in the States yesterday. The murder trial captivated the world, with people tuning in daily to watch it. But why did it grab all of our attention? What was it about O.J. Simpson's trial? And I want to talk to people today, to listeners. Were you one of the people tuned in daily to watch what happened in the courtroom? We want to hear your stories on the programme. But law lecturer at NUI Galway, Larry Donnelly, and comedian Jim Elliott, both with me in studio. Good afternoon, first of all, folks.
Good afternoon.
Does that overstate it, the murder trial that captivated the world, Larry? Or?
Well, it certainly captivated the United States. You would have had to look hard to find anyone who wasn't watching the trial and then, of course, the verdict. There's a famous anecdote that actually the United States Supreme Court was in the midst of an oral argument when the verdict was handed down, and a clerk rushed in to pass a notice to what had happened, and the justices in the middle of the argument were reading, O.J. has been acquitted, which shows you, I suppose, the extent to which this grasped public attention. In the United States, the reality is O.J. Simpson was, let's rewind, O.J. Simpson was an amazing American football player and then became an extraordinary actor. And in a way, it was ironic that this became such a trial and a case in a situation about race, because O.J.'s big thing was that he had transcended race. He used to say, I'm not black, I'm O.J. And then ultimately for his trial to expose such fault lines on the issue of race in the United States, I suppose, was a strange development given his career to date before then.
You see, that's the thing, Jim. Like, it probably had everything in terms of its, you know, attraction or appeal beyond the States. Like, you had a, you know, celebrity, wealthy.
Celebrity is the huge one.
Yeah, celebrity defendant.
Yeah, absolutely. It was celebrity defendant. It always helps when the victim is white if you're trying to get press in the U.S., so that was there as well. I always liked Chris Rock's joke about it, about how it wasn't about race, that it was about fame. In fact, if O.J. wasn't famous, his name wouldn't even be O.J. He'd be Orenthal, the bus-driving murderer.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you never heard that one?
No.
All right. But here's the other thing, too, that I don't think people really appreciate, especially if you're in your 20s right now, the monoculture that we had at the time. There were, you know, it was network TV and cable TV. There was internet, but there were no social networks or anything like that.
95.
And so it absolutely dominated. You didn't have to watch the trial. I was in high school, so I was in school during the day. I was not watching the trial. You didn't have to watch the trial. It was the lead story on the 6 o'clock news every single night, was what happened in the trial that day. And every night after the news is over, 10, 11 o'clock, then you've got the late night talk shows. You get David Letterman and Jay Leno. All of them start with a 10-minute comedy monologue about what's going on in the world today. So all of them would always talk about the O.J. Simpson trial. It was constant. You were bathed in coverage.
So did you, like, I'm trying to think, you know, your age at the time, were you watching much of it, or just, you probably got a bit of a roundup every day then?
I got a roundup every day. Yeah. I was 15 when the car chase happened. And the car chase was when he was in the car and being led on a low-speed car chase down the freeways in Los Angeles. And I don't think people understand. It wasn't just that it was on the news channel. Every single channel cut their broadcast of whatever they were showing to go live to Los Angeles. One of the networks was showing the NBA Finals, Game 5 of a 7-game series between New York and Houston. And that channel cut away to watch a low-speed car chase. If Leinster are playing to lose in the Heineken Cup Final, Ryan Tuberty is barricaded in his house in a standoff with the cops, that Ryan Tuberty story will be on the RT News channel.
That didn't happen, but just...
They're not going to cut away from the game.
That's
to go
the significance.
To the breaking story.
Well, actually, on that, a journalist and entrepreneur, Mark Little, is with us here on the line too. Because, Mark, you were covering the O.J. Simpson trial for RTE as the Washington correspondent at the time.
Yeah, it was my first big story. I arrived in Washington in September of 95. And I remember on the day itself, I went to Howard University, which is this historical African-American university training the elite lawyers. And we were in the room that day, and I was with this cameraman who was African-American, and I was the only Irish guy clearly in the room. the verdict was being read, they didn't even get to the end of the verdict. And the place went bananas with elation. Because all these kids, and I had come to America, I think, thinking I knew everything about the United States. And clearly, you spent your first 6 months losing all those preconceptions. I had come thinking the overwhelming facts in this case were against OJ. There was just so much physical evidence. And yet you could see in the eyes and the expressions of jubilation in that room that day that there was a different trial that happened that day, that the ultimately Los Angeles police themselves were considered to be racist for generations. There were reasonable doubts introduced. There were mistakes made. And then there was the theatrics of, we heard Johnny Cochran earlier there about, if the glove don't fit, you've got to acquit. So this was two different trials. And it just, for me, spoke of this racial divide. But one of the things I'm struck listening to Jim and Larry is that it was the last television trial. Like 150 million people in America tuned in for the verdict. There were only 1 million people on the internet in 1995.
Right.
So it is a generational divide for so many reasons, because of the racial divide, the last television story. And I think in many ways, the drama, this idea of two sets of people living in totally different realities reflects the way that America has developed since. So this was much more significant, I think, than possibly think people think as a celebrity trial.
Do you know, Jim mentioned the car chase, the famous car chase a few moments ago. What was the significance of that, Mark? Because we were actually only rewatching some of it in the office today. And, you know, like the comments people, like everybody made was, why didn't the police speed up and Jay, you know, and I suppose try and cordon him off or chase him.
So picture the scene. There's helicopters now sitting on top of the Bronco. There are people turning out of the overpasses on the Los Angeles freeways as this long, slow car chase goes on. And everyone thinks there's a suicidal O.J. Simpson in that car with a gun to his head. And the cops at that stage were thinking, we're not going to drive this man to suicide. And I think that was the context to it. But again, there was like 95 million people watching that live on television at that moment. So again, I don't think there's any, there's nothing since that has been as dramatic as the slow car chase and the trial. And in some ways, you know, the irony is when I try explaining this to my kids, my 18, 19 year old, I say, you know, Kim Kardashian, she's so famous, right? Well, her dad, Robert Kardashian, was one of OJ's friends and defense attorneys. And if you are looking for the source of the fame of the Kardashian family, there's a link between those two stories. But that's the only time I ever get a chance to explain this to a new generation without them kind of eyes glazing over.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember Larry as well. Like it was, I'm trying to think, was it televised continuously here in Ireland? I was probably in around fourth or fifth class in primary school, but I remember the OJ Simpson trial. So my parents must have been, it must have been on more than 6-1 News and RTE.
I'm sure it was. I mean, one thing is for sure, it was on TV constantly. And I'm older than Jim, so I was in college at the time. And certainly, you know, on breaks between classes, it was like a sport. We were all watching as much of the trial as we possibly could. And I think Jim's point and Mark's point as well about how culture was so different. We didn't have many options in terms of what we were doing for entertainment. So this became the entertainment. And if you ever wanted a good advertisement for why I don't think trials should be televised in Ireland ever, you only have to look to the OJ trial, because the lawyers on both sides, the judge even, they became these sort of larger-than-life characters.
Well, the legal, the defense team became the slogan of the dream team. They became sort of celebrities in themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of them were lawyers, I mean, you know, who'd been knocking around the United States, who would have had big-time reputations anyway. People like F. Lee Bailey, Alan Dershowitz, Barry Scheck, Johnny Cochran. These were household names, as it were. And for them to rally around OJ was extraordinary. And the reality here is you saw Marsha Clark and Chris Dodden, and again, they were the prosecutors, but they got completely outlawed. And of course, there was another layer there, because Marsha and Chris were more than just colleagues while the trial was going on, as has been rumored. So there was so many layers to this and so much drama. I think that's why it captured so many people's attention. attention.
Listener here says the low speed car chase was crazy. We stopped. We all stopped everything we were doing just to pile around the TV to watch it. Another listener says, I'm pretty sure there was a Match of the Day style show in Ireland most nights, perhaps on Channel 4. Another texter in Dalkey says we purposely signed up to a hugely expensive TV service just to follow the OJ trial. It was huge. This listener was in first year in college in Maynooth, and I remember us all rushing back to our house to watch the verdict. Everybody I knew in college was watching it at the time. It was absolutely massive. Do you remember?
You know what I remember from the verdict? So I'm in high school at the time, and I'm in DC downtown. High school's on North Capitol and I Street, so very central. And when I get out of high school every day, I got to walk three blocks to the metro, to the subway, to get home. And one of the things that was kind of unique to that corner outside Union Station is that there were these dudes that had access to T-shirt printing presses. And if there was a big game on Sunday, Redskins versus Cowboys or something, or anything happening, 4th of July, there were these guys just printing black market T-shirts with cool designs and whatever was going on. The sports ones were always fun to get because they would be up to the minute because they printed them yesterday or that morning. And that afternoon when I walked to the subway, there were dudes out front selling OJ innocent T-shirts that had 12 thumbs up, not guilty running down the side. For the 12 jurors. I didn't get one, and it's one of my greatest regrets, because what a piece of cultural memorabilia to have.
Now,
would be a black
it?
Mark, a street O.J. Simpson innocent T-shirt? You bet I'd rock that, man.
Patty is with us on the line as well. Patty, do you remember the trial and the verdict?
I remember it almost like it was yesterday, because my daughter was asking about it this morning. And I think the one thing, the panelists covered it very well, but the one thing that I remember, I was living in New York at the time, and I actually went down to Times Square to see the verdict, is that we had become a very kind of verdict-focused, you know, audience. The Rodney King trial a couple years prior had obviously generated a lot of interest and bad press and kind of nervousness around the justice system and verdicts. And I remember living in New York. I just moved to New York when that verdict happened, and I was in the office in New York. And I remember when we were going down to Times Square for this verdict, we were kind of nervous. We were like, okay, are there going to be crowds? Is there going to be a riot? Like, what's going to happen? But anyway, my boss and I, like, bravely went down there and stood amongst a couple thousand of our, you know, fellow citizens looking up at the big Sony Trinitron thing.
Just to paint the scene, you're going down to Times Square, to where you have all of the big screens, where you've, you know, the huge corporation advertisements. So you're going down to watch the verdict live.
Watch the verdict. Yeah, I worked at the Macy's store at 34th Street. So it was just six blocks up, and in that time there were fewer of kind of the big billboards, but there was this big like Sony TV thing. And we went down kind of saying like, oh, well, this is going to be, you know, we'll want to remember where we were when we saw the verdict. And I actually texted my old boss this morning to just remind her. And she texted me back. She's like, I'm so glad we did that. But anyway, we stood there and there were thousands of people looking up at the verdict. And I have to say, like, there was a bit there were some cheers, but there was kind of like a disturbed silence, you know, and then, you know, we all kind of like then went back to work, you know. So it was a place to be and a moment to be had. But it was, you know, I was in my early 20s at my first job ever living in Manhattan. But it was certainly a moment. And I remember being in a sports bar in Hoboken, New Jersey, when the Knicks game kind of cut in half to the car and to the game. And people just wanted the car situation to end so that they could focus on the Knicks
game.
I remember that really clearly. Yeah, like people were kind of like, saying things like shoot yourself because they wanted the game to go on.
New York.
There's a real sense, I suppose, of where were you on the day when the verdict came in. Were you getting that, Mark, you know, working in the US and covering this and in your first gig, like the appetite for information about the verdict?
It was overwhelming. Nobody was talking about anything else. But the thing was, for me, was under the surface of the obsession that gripped everybody were very different lived realities of what this meant. And I think for African-Americans or people of color in the United States, there was something different going on. There was a black jury who were sitting there. And again, I think, as Larry may have said there, the Rodney King tragedy, which was this man beaten on camera, which influenced a lot of political debate for years. That was one reality. And then on the other side were people, and we haven't even mentioned the names of the victim here, but Nicole Simpson and Ronald Goldman were killed in the most vicious circumstances. So, you know, if you looked at either of those things, as you talked to people in the days following, you saw two different lived realities. And I'm not quite sure that even this long time since the trial, that there's been a massive change in how different people in the United States see the news from their own lived reality. So that was my first big awakening to the fact to that those, you could have two contradictory emotions at the same moment in time and both be valid to some extent.
Listener says, when the news broke that the jury were going to return with a verdict soon, everybody went to the nearest pub and it was standing room only. They were packed to the gills. Another listener says they watched the verdict delivered in Donny and Nesbitt's, you know, just across from us here in Dublin. Like, that's just something you would never see.
No, it's just to speak to where you were at the moment of the verdict. It's a moment I'll never forget as long as I live, because I was on my college campus, a small Jesuit liberal arts college. And there we were, my friends and I all gathered around the television when the verdict was announced. And we were aghast. We were fuming. We were outraged. We thought, this guy is getting away with murder. And that was our reaction to it. But literally 10 or 15 minutes later, the small cohort of African-American students at the college gathered in an impromptu gathering and were celebrating what had just happened. And to Mark's point about the two different emotions, to me, it crystallized the racial fault line that exists in America. And if anything, things have gotten worse since then.
Mike is with us on the line. Mike, I believe you were on the freeway that day.
Hello, yes, Andrea. I was. I was in Orange County. That I was living in Los Angeles at that stage in '94, and I had bought a mountain bike, and I was driving back on the motorway, and I saw OJ's Bronco along with all the patrol cars following him. And it's funny because you could see all these people standing in the overpass shouting "Go OJ" for his escape.
This was the day of the infamous car chase, Mike.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So you're there on you're on your bike. You see the crowds.
I'm in a car.
Sorry,
I just bought a mountain bike. Yeah.
So you're in your car. You see all of the crowd starting to gather around on the overpass. There's heli. Yeah. Just describe the scene for us.
Oh, there was just a huge amount of people on the overpass because everybody knew he was making his way down the I-5 with all the highway patrol cars after him, and you could see the lights going and the Bronco was all over the news, and I was listening to it as I was going, you know, myself. So. Because I lived in Redondo Beach, which was a fair bit of a drive up from Orange County. But obviously he had gone back, then went back up to Brentwood to his estate later on, you know, so I heard the whole things.
You probably had the radio on, did you, Mike, to hear what was happening?
Yeah, I found it very strange, like they're, you know, how they're saying, like a lot of people said it was a race issue and all this, and they, some people thought he was innocent and stuff, but what I saw, they showed footage of the actual murder scene the day after, and it was absolutely horrendous. And it was never shown again. I never ever saw it again. But it was like an abattoir, like the actual scene from the back of the house where the two, you know, his wife was murdered and her friend. But I found very strange as well. Nobody ever asked the question where the bag went that Robert Kardashian took right from underneath the police detectives. You know, and right when he was apprehended at his estate, and that was, you know, it's just one of those things. There was a lot of stuff that disappeared, and it was.
Were you following it closely when you were there?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't help it here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It was very. I used to watch Jay Leno at night, and it was very funny his takes on the various days proceedings, and he'd have like they had. Scenes where you'd have whatever a takeoff would be for the day, and they had like the OJ bunch and stuff, and all these people send ups of the courtroom, and they'd have the dancing Itos and stuff, and all these other various takeoffs were just quite a funny his way of you know making humor of the seeing it every day. It becomes such a celebrity following, you know.
Jim, in
agreement.
Do you
remember the dancing Itos? Do you remember? Any idea what I'm talking about? The judge in the case was a guy by the name of Lance Ito, and he had kind of a characteristic sort of close cropped beard and glasses. And Jay Leno had a dance troupe of 12 guys that he put in judges' outfits with the beard and the glasses, and they did a dance number. It was the dancing Itos on TV at night.
It just seems like such a foreign concept to. Like, can you imagine that? It sounds like a
satire movie, like some kind of Paul Verhoeven thing you'd see in RoboCop, where there's the trial during the day, and then there's the variety show about the trial at night.
Imagine in Ireland, Larry.
Yeah, no, it's such a foreign concept. You think about it here, where you really can't make any comment when there's an ongoing trial, whereas there you can say whatever you like.
Yeah, Paul in Dundrum, wait till you hear this. Paul says, we were in New York for the Ireland-Italy match, which Ray Highton scored the winner. We watched the TV with the white Bronco chase. We were singing OJ, OJ, OJ instead of ole, ole, ole to the amusement of the Americans who were packed into the pub in New York at the time. Another texter says, from September 1996 to December, I stayed as a house guest with a friend of mine in New York. Her other house guest at the time, and who we hung out with a lot, was Paula, OJ's girlfriend. This texter says, I was in New York at the World Cup in a bar watching a match when it cut to the OJ chase. I asked the barman to put the game back on as some silly cop show had come on at the time. He said he couldn't do anything. We never got to see the rest of the game, says this listener. Just pretty incredible. And it's the remarkable, I suppose, takeaway too from this today is it really is a case of everybody remembers where they were at the time of the verdict and the trial.
You know what really scares me about the whole thing? Is that here we are 20 years later and the killer is still at large.
But I mean, on a serious note, I don't think it should be forgotten, you know, Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman, they lost their lives.
And their families, I'm sure, you know.
And whatever about, you know, the trial verdict, I mean, OJ proved himself to be a demonstrably bad guy, and I'm not shedding any tears that he's dead.
Mark, you were just making a quick point there to wrap.
Yeah, just to say, well, he did actually end up being a pathetic figure, and he went on to lose a civil case. The families of the victims sued him for $33 million. I was covering that trial. It was 1987. They got a verdict against him. He was obviously broke at this stage, and he actually went to jail for 9 years for organizing an attempt to steal back his sporting trophies in Las Vegas. So there was no measure of justice for the victims per se. But he didn't end up to be any kind of hero.
No, journalist and entrepreneur Mark Little, Patty as well for joining us. Mike too with the story. Also law lecturer at NUI Galway, Larry Donnelly, and comedian Jim Elliott. You're on the comedy trail at the moment.
Yes, I am. I'm in May. I'm doing my solo show. You can catch me. I'm in Limerick, Dundalk, Belfast, Galway, and Portlaoise. Jim Elliott Comedy for all tickets.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.